Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Timely Takes podcast. I'm Meredith Irvine, and I'm a senior editor here at thecorporatecouncil.net. And today on the podcast, my guests are Megan McGowan. Megan is head of business development for the North America Investor Engagement Team at Computershare, and Chris Hayden. And Chris is the president of Georgeson North America. They are here to share some of their takeaways and thoughts about how the 2026 proxy season has been playing out. Before we get into the proxy season, though, Megan and Chris, I wondered if you could just briefly give our audience a little bit of info about you and your role and your careers.
Thanks so much, Meredith. Delighted to be here. And thank you so much for having us to the discussion today. By way of quick introduction, Megan McGowan. I'm head of business development for investor engagement at Computershare North America. As you mentioned at the top, investor engagement is made up of three complementary business units: our Georgeson advisory business, our investor intelligence business, and then our IR suite. On the Georgeson side, we specialize in corporate governance advisory, proxy solicitation, shareholder engagement, activism, and M&A. And then our investor intelligence business provides ownership intelligence, stock surveillance, and debt ID. And then lastly, our investor relations suite, which we just launched last week, includes a targeting solution and a platform for IR teams. And these three business units really bring together traditionally disparate services under one unified umbrella. In my role in particular, I work closely with public companies, in particular investor relations and legal teams across all three areas. And that really gives me a unique perspective on how issuers are thinking about shareholder engagement, governance, ownership trends, investor targeting, and voting dynamics. Chris, over to you.
Great. Thanks, Megan, and thanks, Meredith, for having both of us. I echo Megan's appreciation. I'm the president of Georgeson North America, where I oversee our Georgeson advisory business. So I've been in the proxy solicitation business for a little over 30 years at this stage, working on operating company proxies, investment management company proxies, contested situations, tender offers, exchange offers, and the like.
So, companies' investors were navigating some big changes this proxy season, and those started as early as almost 18 months ago now, in February 2025, when the SEC updated guidance related to 13G eligibility. And then this year, the SEC changed its approach to voluntary notices of exempt solicitation. I'm just curious if you have thoughts on how both of those changes impacted the 2026 proxy season. And in light of them, how you're seeing investors communicate their concerns and grievances.
Sure. That's a great question to kick us off with. So around the 13DG guidance from February of 2025, when the guidance was first released, there was a huge period of uncertainty across the market. Some investors very temporarily pulled back on engagement activity while they assessed the implications for Schedule 13DG eligibility. But we're only talking about a matter of days, and we're not even talking weeks or months. By the 2025 season, most investors had adopted to the new framework, where engagement continues, but the nature of those conversations is often more carefully structured than previously. So this has created an environment which issuers increasingly need to be proactive, both in requesting meetings and in raising topics directly. Some larger investors are not going to pick up the phone and call issuers. They're reliant upon the issuer to call them, and then they expect the issuer will set the agenda. If the issuer doesn't bring up the subject, then they shouldn't expect that the investor will ask about it. Investors may be less inclined to volunteer concerns openly, making it even more important for companies to understand investor sentiment before issues emerge in voting results. With regard to the exempt solicitation guidance, prohibition on voluntary exempt solicitation notices appears to have had fairly limited practical impact for most issuers. Many institutional investors were not heavily reliant upon these notices in the first place. That said, exempt solicitations remain important in certain situations around activist campaigns and other special situations. But those tend to be situations that have a well-funded proponent. Those exempt solicitations that were being submitted by retail investors really were not being reviewed by institutional investors for the most part. So, how do investors communicate these concerns? Direct engagement remains the preferred channel for most investors. At the same time, there are some that are increasingly using the proxy voting outcome as their form of communication, meaning voting against a matter when they're unhappy with no prior warning of such vote. In other words, where investors may be less willing to articulate concerns, they may still show up in director elections, say-on-pay votes, or other shareholder proposals. As a result, companies tend to interpret voting outcomes just as carefully as they interpret direct engagement and feedback.
Well, that's been a big challenge. Another challenge this proxy season and another big development was the SEC staff's revised approach to the 14a8 process for shareholder proposals. I'm curious what trends you've seen on the shareholder proposal front this season.
Thanks, Meredith. Yeah, that's exactly right. The SEC's November 2025 shift from the traditional no action process to the current no objection framework has really changed the shareholder proposal landscape fundamentally, as many have talked about over the last few months. And so under the new framework, just as a refresher for everyone that's listening, the SEC generally no longer evaluates the merits of most exclusion requests. And instead, and if an issuer determines it has a reasonable basis to exclude a proposal under Rule 14a8, the SEC will not object to that decision. So what's interesting here is that at first glance, many expected the change to result in more proposal exclusions and fewer proposals reaching a vote. But interestingly, the data showed that the opposite has really been occurring. So according to ISS's data, which is January 1st through end of May, 76% of shareholder proposals were included in proxy statements in 2026, which compared to 63% in 2025. So a 13% increase in proposals that were actually included in proxy statements compared to 2025. And omissions climbed from 27% in 2025 to 17% in 2026. And obviously, this is somewhat counterintuitive, I think, to what people might have expected initially, because I think the perception was that the SEC's revised approach would potentially make it easier for issuers to exclude proposals, but instead created a dynamic of companies having to consider not only whether they can exclude a proposal, but whether doing so is worth the potential consequences. And in conjunction, the SEC's policy change, or since that happened in November, shareholder proponents have increasingly challenged the exclusions, and that's led to more litigation, public campaigns, and other forms of pressure. So as has been covered recently, there's been at least 6 lawsuits filed challenging exclusions under the new framework, which is a significant increase compared to historic norms. So if we look back over the last 50 years, there were 30 total lawsuits over that time period. So the litigation, obviously, and the risks for companies of excluding proposals has gone up dramatically as a result. While the SEC process has received considerable attention, just wanted to cover the underlying proposal landscape, which has continued to evolve year over year. And overall, proposal volume declined pretty dramatically among Russell 3000 issuers this year. So there have been 710 proposals submitted to date, which compares to 840 in 2025 and roughly 1,000 in 2024. So continuing to see just a decrease overall pretty precipitously year over year. And in terms of proposal type, unsurprisingly, governance-focused proposals continue to receive the strongest levels of shareholder support. And one of the most durable or common governance topics is the independent chair proposal, which is continuing to receive strong support. As of last week, independent chair proposals were receiving an average of 25% support. So notable, and just wanted to call that out before I move on to the next topic.
So let's shift away maybe from SEC guidance and talk about some shifts that are happening in terms of how proxy voting happens at institutional investors and how they're using proxy advisors. So both major proxy advisors, we've also seen this year announce some strategic changes in terms of their business model and their approach. And we've also had a few large asset managers announce that they're moving towards AI-driven voting platforms and away from using proxy advisors the way they traditionally have. How do you see these trends impacting public companies and the way they engage and the way they go about their proxy season? And have you already started to observe tangible impact from those trends this proxy season?
Sure, absolutely. There are very meaningful shifts underway. As you mentioned in the question, there are large numbers of investors who are moving away from the 2 incumbent large proxy advisory firms. We are absolutely seeing institutions using internal voting frameworks rather than outsourcing to the proxy advisory firms. And they are definitely starting to use AI to do the analysis. We're also starting to see third-party firms that are creating AI tools where investors can set their own policies and then use these third-party AI tools to help analyze the proxy statements. That said, proxy advisory firms still remain influential, but they're not the sole reference point for voting decisions. If we look into the two biggest firms, Glass Lewis and ISS, Glass Lewis has announced a four-pronged policy structure going forward. That'll start in 2027. They've previously stated publicly that they plan on retiring their house benchmark policies, and instead, clients will be encouraged either to adopt their own custom voting policies or to choose among four new policy alternatives, which are management-aligned, governance-focused, active long-term investor-focused, and sustainability-focused. Importantly, the management-aligned perspective would still not support management where there are perceived egregious governance or performance concerns, such as financial restatements or questionable accounting practices, significant executive overcompensation or perceived overcompensation, or sustained financial underperformance. While the announcement drew a lot of attention, it may be less disruptive than it initially sounds. Many of the largest asset managers already use their own internal voting policies and make independent decisions, even when they subscribe to Glass Lewis or ISS. Investors most likely to rely on one of these firms tend to be the smaller institutions that don't have the resources to build a bespoke policy. When it comes to proxy fights and mergers and acquisitions, Glass Lewis has indicated that its underlying analytical framework is not expected to change. However, recommendations could vary across the four perspectives, depending on how a transaction or contested matter aligns with those policy lenses. That means issuers face even greater complexity in predicting outcomes of their votes. On the ISS front, ISS has not announced a retirement of their benchmark policy, but they have announced a move towards greater customization, more investor-directed stewardship. So in October 2025, ISS announced two new governance research services. First one being Gov360, which provides meeting research, data, and analysis, but no voting recommendation. And then the second is Custom Lens, which will allow investors to tailor the data analysis and recommendations to their own policies. That's not so different than what ISS does today, where institutions can set their own policies and ISS follows the investor's policy. However, these services reinforce the broader trend toward investor-specific rather than advisor-defined voting. When it comes to AI, AI-driven voting tools could potentially further democratize voting analysis. These may reduce dependence on a single work framework. We're seeing institutions develop their own AI tools. And as I mentioned previously, there are also third-party AI tools that allow investors to generate their own research in accordance with their own criteria. At the same time, this means that issuers will likely place greater emphasis on the quality, clarity, and accessibility of their disclosure. Proxy statements need to be clearer, more direct, and easier for both human and AI tools to be able to analyze. Overarching trend is definitely fragmentation. We're moving towards a more decentralized voting ecosystem with more variation in how investors form voting decisions. It means shareholder engagement becomes even more important. Companies will need a much sharper understanding of each investor's voting process, policy framework, and stewardship priorities. And boards will need to assess potential vulnerabilities through this lens and ensure that messaging is aligned across governance, strategy, compensation, and broader shareholder communications.
So, Chris, you mentioned a move towards investor-specific and away from advisor-defined voting, and that's on the institutional investor, asset manager, proxy advisor front. Let's shift and talk about the retail investor front. We've had a lot of retail investor-focused developments this year, including Exxon's announcement about its retail voting program and a number of announcements regarding the expansion of pass-through voting. These renewed focuses on retail investors, I'm curious how you've seen the efforts to increase retail participation or to expand pass-through voting impacting this proxy season, and if you have any kind of notable trends that you've seen emerging in the data on retail investor voting so far.
Sure. Yeah. The Exxon retail voting program certainly has received a lot of coverage in the media this past season. It's one of the most notable retail developments in recent memory. And what the program does is establish standing voting instructions by retail holders. It gives shareholders two options. One is to vote with the board's recommendations on all matters. And the second is to vote with the board's recommendations on all matters except contested elections and M&A matters. Shareholders still have the ability to override those standing instructions at any time. And of course, shareholders are not obligated to choose either of those two options. The program has certainly sparked debate about shareholder rights and governance implications, and there's a variety of viewpoints on the program. Interestingly, ExxonMobil received a shareholder proposal from the New York City Comptroller's Office challenging aspects of the program. The proposal did not suggest that the program be shut down. Rather, the proposal asked ExxonMobil to provide additional options, such as, quote, independent voting options based on standing instructions, a general against management policy, and or customized policies. The proposal received roughly 23% support. And according to Exxon's most recent proxy statement, approximately 3% of the outstanding shares of ExxonMobil opted into the program. The second area of concern has been pass-through voting at major institutions. So pass-through voting continues to expand across the largest institutional investors. They're allowing their fund shareholders to select from a range of voting policies, from voting in line with management stewardship team to choices aligned with ISS, Glass Lewis, or external frameworks. So far, participation has remained relatively low, but we do expect those numbers to continue to grow. One interesting consequence of pass-through voting that may actually increase the number of shares voted in line with proxy advisor policies rather than reduce that influence. Also creates less transparency for issuers in how their shares will ultimately be voted and by whom. So the broader takeaway on the retail front is increased complexity. Efforts to increase participation pass-through voting are expected, expanding the number of decision makers in the voting chain, but they do not necessarily make outcomes easier to predict. From an issuer perspective, that means less transparency, potentially greater dispersion in voting behavior.
Let's talk also about one of the big hot topics this proxy season, which has been Dexit, this and last proxy season, I should say, and perhaps Texas in particular. I'm curious what you're seeing on that front as well.
Another notable trend is the continued discussion around companies reducing reliance on Delaware as that default jurisdiction of incorporation. And so management proposals to move from Delaware to other jurisdictions were elevated compared to 2 years ago, but a little bit down from 2025, notably. So there were 17 proposals identified year to date in 2026 to reincorporate, which was compared to 20 in 2025, and then just 4 in 2024. Some companies are increasingly looking, as I just described, to jurisdictions such as Texas and Nevada for that greater predictability and lower litigation risk, or at least that's the perception. And to your point, Meredith, one of the more notable developments this year is that Texas has emerged as the preferred destination for companies leaving Delaware, which is surpassing Nevada. So this year, 65% of management reincorporation proposals, so that comes to 11 of the 17, were named Texas as that destination state, which compared to just 5% that comprised the reincorporation into Texas in 2025. It was just 1 out of 20 in 2025. And so, you know, generally, I think ties into what we've been talking about, just some of the disruption and the shifts that have taken place this proxy season in terms of less predictability and just a shift overall and the way that companies are thinking about different matters related to governance and notably, you know, where they're incorporated. Okay. And then just quickly, in addition to those reincorporating to Texas, there were three other ones that were filed on proxy statements. So there were two from Delaware into New Jersey and then one from Montana.
That's interesting, Megan. I had not focused on the shift from Nevada in the year prior and Texas this year. Obviously, I knew some really big votes were focused on Texas, but I didn't realize that that kind of played out in the majority and in the data overall this year. I'd be so curious to see how many of those companies actually are headquartered in Texas, since there might be some tie to Texas that might be driving that, but that's really interesting data. I wanted to open it up to both of you just to share if there's anything else I didn't ask you specifically about that was an interesting kind of key trend from 2026 that you think it's helpful for our members to hear about.
Overall, you know, this going into this proxy season, one of the most notable developments was the just continued divergence among the largest asset managers. So Historically, many issuers view the big three as a relatively aligned on stewardship priorities and engagement expectations, but that dynamic has shifted. So while there's still, of course, areas of common ground, the stewardship approaches are becoming increasingly differentiated. And that's overall, as we've covered, Chris and I, in various different ways, just created a more fragmented shareholder landscape. And it mirrors a broader trend we're seeing across the market where shareholder influence is becoming less centralized and more dispersed across a variety of decision makers, voting frameworks, and engagement philosophies. And so to tie back to the question on bifurcation, so BlackRock split its stewardship team into BlackRock Active and Passive. So there's now two distinct stewardship teams that companies have to engage with. And then overall, their stewardship priorities have evolved and generally are placing a greater emphasis on company-specific materiality and long-term financial performance, which is marked change from prior years. And rather than applying a highly prescriptive framework across issuers, BlackRock appears increasingly focused on how individual companies identify, oversee, and disclose the risks and opportunities relevant to their business. And what this means for issuers is there's a greater importance on demonstrating how the board oversees material risks and opportunities specific to the company. To touch on Vanguard, Vanguard released its policy updates effective January 2026, which included revisions to its separate U.S. proxy voting policies pertaining to Vanguard Capital Management and then Vanguard Portfolio Management. And its revised structure includes two distinct stewardship teams responsible for proxy voting and engagement. Vanguard Capital Investment Stewardship, which covers a full global range of index equity strategies, and then the Portfolio Management Investment Stewardship side, which covers U.S. sector and style box index strategies, as well as internally advised quantitative strategies. And this structure overall reflects just the broader trend towards more differentiated stewardship approaches among the large asset managers and is really one of the clearest examples of bifurcation, including within a single institution. And to zoom out, similar to what BlackRock has seemed to shift towards from a policy perspective, Vanguard continues to place significant emphasis on board accountability, effective board oversight, and long-term governance fundamentals. They've also reinforced that the role of stewardship is not to dictate company strategy or day-to-day management, but rather to evaluate whether boards are effectively overseeing material risks and opportunities. So that ties the Vanguard summary. And then just lastly, State Street has split its stewardship teams into sustainability and non-sustainability sides. So separation there is much different from how BlackRock and Vanguard have split their stewardship teams and overall just creates more nuance and complexity for how companies approach engagement and stewardship discussions overall. And I think, again, to tie it back to just 2026 proxy season overall, the historical expectation of broad consensus among the largest asset managers is less predictable than it once was. And we're increasingly seeing different voting philosophies, engagement priorities, and governance frameworks just emerge across the major institutions. And it's just become harder for issuers to rely on a single uniform engagement narrative, which really just serves to Chris's point that he's articulated in that engagement and having a clear, concise proxy statement is critical to maintaining, you know, clarity with investors. So in spite of the shifting dynamics that are taking place, companies have a lot of ability to control the narrative and be able to tell their story both through direct engagement and then through the proxy statement.
Chris, anything to add on your end?
I think that was a great way to conclude. You know, engagement is critical. Proxy statements need to be sharp and concise. Voting influence is definitely more fragmented than in the past. Companies really need to be precise in understanding who their shareholders are and how they vote.
All the more important to get that information up front from folks who do what the two of you do, and then get in front of any pain points in your proxy statement this year, next year, and going forward. Well, thank you both so much. Thank you to everyone listening in. That concludes our podcast.
Thanks, Meredith.